You're listening to episode 103 of the Tennis Files Podcast with special guest Sam Jones.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey everyone, my name is Mehrban Iranshad, and on the Tennis Files Podcast, we interview top tennis experts, coaches, and players to help you improve your tennis game. And today we have a very interesting interview for you, and it's with Sam Jones, and he's actually a playtester at Tennis Express. And Tennis Express is a fantastic website where you can get a lot of tennis gear, shoes, rackets, etc. And I thought it would be really cool to interview a playtester. And so what I mean by a playtester is somebody who actually tests gear and then presents that information to you. So for example, Sam tests different rackets, different strings, and shoes as well. And it's a very cool job that I think would be very cool for you to learn about, the ins and outs of what it's actually like to be a playtester, how much gear he tests, and whether he has 50 million rackets and strings in his basement or something like that. And we also, of course, get into tips for you all to help you choose the proper racket and strings and gear for you. So very interesting stuff. I've never interviewed a playtester before, but I've also always really appreciated all the effort that these playtesters put into their reviews, because a lot of times, especially when we're shopping online, we don't know exactly what string is right for us. But through reviews from both players and playtesters, especially, take a really deep dive into these different tennis rackets, strings, shoes, etc. That's how we often make our decisions. So you got to give it up to them. So I think you'll really enjoy this interview with Sam. And without further ado, here it is. Hey everyone, welcome to another fantastic episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. I'm really excited to have Sam Jones, a playtester and content writer from Tennis Express, on the podcast today to talk about tennis gear and the life of a playtester. We've actually never had a playtester on the podcast, so I think that it's definitely going to be really interesting for everybody to listen in on, just the ins and outs of having that sort of pretty cool and I think rare job. But to give you a bit of background on Sam, as I mentioned, he is a content writer and playtester for Tennis Express, and he was also a four-year member of the Southwestern University men's tennis team from 2001 to 2005. So I guess you're a couple years older than me, Sam, but not too much. I graduated in 2007, and Sam achieved all SCAC, which is the Southern Collegiate Athletic Conference status, his senior year, and then he began a 10-plus year coaching career. So Sam clearly has an extensive background in tennis. Sam was also certified as a master racket technician in 2011, so he also has some very good stringing skills here. And Sam has always been fascinated by new string and racket technologies and how they can help tennis players improve their games and avoid injuries. So that is very cool as well. And Sam, once again, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast.
Mehrban, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Oh, anytime, Sam, anytime. And so first question for you here is, everybody wants to know this, I think, for a playtester, but how much gear do you have stuffed in your house and your closets and everywhere else?
Oh my gosh. Too much is the short answer. I probably all playtesters are somewhat racket hoarders. You get a racket and you use it, and then maybe you switch rackets, or you buy a new one that you really like. And I've never been so good at getting rid of the ones after I'm no longer using them. So I bet I've got, and I guess I got to combine with my wife what she has. So we probably have 20, 25, 30 rackets scattered throughout the house and garage. I'm always getting yelled at to keep them in in the garage, but that's the way it goes, you know?
Wow, that's pretty awesome. And as far as tennis, so we talked about your background, and I believe you're also a 5-0 player like me, which is, very high level, but not patting myself on the back here. But how did you get your start playing tennis?
So actually, a friend of mine, basically, he was into a kind of just a recreational tennis program at a local municipal park in Dallas where I grew up. And, you know, moms will be moms. And his mom said something to the effect to my parents, like, hey, so-and-so's doing this tennis clinic. He seems to really like it. The coaching is really good. You know, they're building kind of life skills through tennis, things that are very translatable. Why don't you get Sam and another one of y'all's friends to come out and do it with him? It's just twice a week, you know, about an hour class. And I did it. I went through it. It was probably like a 6-week session. And, you know, I kind of stopped for a while, actually went back to just normal stuff, you know, baseball when baseball season was going, basketball when basketball season was going. And it wasn't until maybe 4 or 5 months later where I just sort of remembered the tennis camps and the tennis classes that I had gone to. And I just really got the bug hard. I think this is going to date me a little bit, but I remember in 1995, I remember Agassi losing in the Wimbledon semifinals to Boris Becker. And I just remember that he lost. And that was the first tennis match that I ever remember, you know, sitting down somewhere. I think I was at a hotel and I saw that match was on TV and I was just captivated by it. So that was kind of I think that really set the hook in me. Like, I just really was interested in, and then pretty much straight away, I was trying to figure out what racket is Agassi using? You know, he's using it's yellow and black. It looks like a bumblebee, you know, and I was pretty much infatuated with that stuff from the beginning.
That's awesome, Sam. Great background there. And then with tennis gear in particular, what made you so interested in regards to tennis gear and equipment as well as your, you know, your tennis interest?
I mean, I think some of this is kind of funny, but I believe, you know, I've played a little bit of golf in my life, but I feel like golfers, you know, if you're not driving the ball straight, obviously you can fix it with a new club. You know, you obviously can. Oh, okay, well, you know, I'm not able to hit the ball on the green. I need to spend $500 on a club. And I think, you know, you and I know this. The reality is I could buy Roger Federer's racket. And if I can't really generate any racket head speed, it's probably going to end badly for me. Mm-hmm. So I think in general, what I've appreciated about is like kind of sifting through, hey, this development in technology really can help, you know, the majority of players, or it can help a certain type of player. My boss has always said, he's always been a believer that there's a racket out there for everyone. But just because a racket works for you or for me doesn't mean that it works for other people. It's a very personal thing. So I think that, and I love the marketing of it. You know, sometimes it can be dubious when you're trying to figure out if something is, you know, really a new technology. But I think more importantly, what I like about the technology, it's all driven to get people out and play tennis. And that's kind of my goal, is I want people to play tennis, because the way I see it, the more people that are playing tennis, the more popular it is, the better for the game overall. So that's kind of where I come from as far as my obsession with technology and new gear and new equipment.
Yeah, I really love that. I've had some other, tech-related individuals on the podcast, like Allen Iverson from Babolat and Preston Lemon from Wilson. And yeah, I think that I really love your outlook, Sam, because I think, you know, in the end, we should all be striving to get more people out there. It's just such a wonderful game with such a rich history. And it's also one of the healthiest and, in my opinion, safest sports as well, which is kind of why my parents got me into tennis, but I fell in love with it. And so really appreciate all that you're doing and your passion for the sport. So as far as your life as a play tester, in addition to being a content writer as well, work for Tennis Express. Sam, how did you actually end up becoming a playtester?
So right out of college, I started teaching tennis, and I moved back to the Dallas area, and I started teaching tennis up there. And just pretty quickly, you know, I was at a TBRM Tennis Academy, and was traveling with juniors to tournaments throughout Texas, and you know, just really as you do when you get out of college, just working like crazy. And we were a sponsor academy at the time by Prince. We were a Prince plugged in academy, and I basically met a sales rep for a couple of racket companies there just when they were, you know, it was a big account. So I was always kind of, you know, the 11th or 12th pro as part of a pretty big junior operation there. But, you know, I think he learned pretty quickly that I was a little bit more technically driven about, you know, which gear could be best for which levels of our juniors. And, you know, I think one of the big things was this was probably, yeah, circa 2006. So this is kind of where people are starting to use the Big Banger and the polyester strings. And so I think I acquitted myself and the sales reps kind of figured out I knew what I was talking about when I was asking them what they thought and what their opinion was about some of our, you know, 14 and under players using all polyester setups. And was that a good idea? And, you know, I've kind of cultivated those relationships just over the years. I ended up moving back to Austin. And I don't know if you know, but, you know, sales reps, sometimes the sales reps always seem to be the same guys. They just sort of change brands sometimes, you know, it's just kind of it's a small world tennis is, you know, that is just as well as I do. But yeah, I just kind of kept in contact with these guys and, you know, I'd shoot them an email and see what was going on. And then kind of from then on, kept in contact. And then when I saw this job posting at Tennis Express for basically they were looking for somebody to kind of MC their racket reviews. The guy that was doing it was really good. He's like really good at team sales now. So they were looking for somebody like that. And I think I got a couple of really good recommendations from some sales reps out of Texas.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. As you mentioned that, you know, the playtesters is kind of a small world sales reps. I know that previous guest Preston Lemon, he actually was in the Babolat family and then he went to Wilson. But yeah, very, very cool stuff there. And I'm really glad that you got into this very cool type of job here. And we mentioned, Sam, that you do other things besides playtesting gear and equipment. So can you kind of go into, you know, perhaps like what exactly, you know, is content writing and then maybe any other duties that you do at Tennis Express as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So the playtesting is how do you say it? Like the playtesting part of that, of the job is, you know, it's easy because you're playing tennis, you know, you're testing gear. Of course I'm based in Texas, so it's really hot right now. So I guess maybe that's the only thing I'd have to complain about with the actual play testing. But I would say more of the bulk of my time is, you know, we have so many products being released at really all times throughout the calendar year. We're talking new shoes, new strings. I'm not sure all of the listeners have any idea how many different sets of string there are out there in the world. It's a pretty incredible number, walls upon walls upon walls for sure. But a lot of my tasks are actually a little bit more formulaic in that, you know, let's say company A or, you know, Head Racket Sports comes out with, you know, a new string with the launch of a new, you know, I guess the big thing now is the gravity rackets. So basically my responsibility isn't just to review those rackets written and video, but also to write the descriptions for all of the models, kind of do the research, get the assets from the manufacturers, check through the assets, you know, make sure everything makes sense to me, because it's really about telling a story. You know what I think a lot of with racket sports now, you know, you have to kind of convince somebody why they need a new racket. And if I do a good job on the descriptions and I get, okay, well, you know, this version's going to have this, it's going to be a little easier on your arm, or it's going to have this technology, it's going to be, you know, a little bit crisper, so if you want something a little bit firmer, you got to go this direction. So a lot of it is more that you know, I guess you'd say data entry, but it's still the content I do is more, okay, why should someone buy a Blade 98 based on this description, you know? And so a little bit, you know, it sounds simple, but sometimes you're kind of scratching your head like, well, you know, this is a really great racket. There's a lot of people out there that use a Blade 98 right now that pretty much no matter what I say, they're going to buy it, or pretty much no matter what I say, they're not going to buy it if they're not really a, you know, a Blade 98 fan. But so the biggest thing is all of these descriptions, it's not just the rackets, that it's not just the, you know, the Federer autograph or the Djokovic Speed Pro. It's also the you know, Speed Light or the Speed S or the Speed MP Light. And that's where it gets a little tricky too, because it's super easy to get excited about a racket that you would actually use, right? you know, you're, hey, man, I could see this, you know, I'm buying into this technology. It could help me in my own game. But it's a little bit harder when you're writing a description for maybe a game improvement racket or, you know, maybe a little bit longer, more powerful kind of tweener frame that isn't really something that I would use, but it's still my job to describe it accurately and get people excited about it.
Right. Great stuff, Sam. And so what are some of the most important or maybe like the one or two most persuasive elements of these write-ups that you really think people are looking for the most that really turn the switch on from like from curiosity to actually purchasing a particular racket or string, etc.?
Well, the answer to your question is I'm still trying to find that out. I don't think that it's I believe that the descriptions are really, really important, but I think you have to have somebody that is, you know, at least perusing the site or looking, or maybe they saw you know, something on social media about like a new head gravity or a new Wilson Clash or, you know, something to that effect. And then once you kind of get them in that door, I think, you know, there's people that are spec hunters. They're constantly looking for, well, I need something in a mid plus, but it needs to be heavier than 10.5 ounces, but lighter than 11 ounces. And I need it to be this flex rating or this string pattern. You know, there's people that are like that, that will never buy a racket out of their, you know, favorite specs. But there's also people that kind of get to our site and they don't have, you know, sort of a preconceived notion about what they need. So a big portion of my job is actually, along with the product descriptions, we have tennisexpress.com/blog. And we write, like, I have a beginner's guide to buying rackets on there. It's basically a, you know, a what's what or the five W's of, you know, weight, swing weight, all that fun stuff and what it means kind of in layman's terms. So a lot of it, I think, is just educating the consumer. And you want to sell rackets, but maybe the worst thing you can do is it's kind of thing I have nightmares about is, you know, you sell a 3-0 level player that's just kind of getting started and enjoying the game and maybe playing a little bit of league tennis, and then you get them into the wrong racket, you know, and then you kind of fast forward a couple of weeks and they're like, hey, my elbow hurts, what's going on? And I look and it's, okay, great, well, they've got a, you know, near 12 ounce racket, yeah, and it's strung way too tight with the right with the wrong string. And so then it's like, okay, well, you know, whoever it was, or, you know, they're in the wrong racket. So the, you know, the goal is to try to educate so that especially those first time players, because, you know, the thing is, if you get a first time player and they hurt themselves playing tennis, all of a sudden it's not so injury free, right? Mm-hmm. You know, then you might lose that player for a while, you know, just based on some maybe incorrect advice that like a club pro gave, or, you know, maybe a friend said, hey, I use this racket and it's great, but it would be totally wrong for, you know, more of a beginner level player.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff, Sam. And very interesting stuff here with the content writing. So another follow-up for you. I'm curious, do you ever get any sorts of pressures or anything from particular, I mean, you have to name them, of course, but like particular brands or maybe like follow-ups, like they read it and they say, hey, you should have said this and that. Like, is that part of your daily experience every so often, or is it pretty detached?
I mean, we're all in the business of selling tennis and selling the game. And so I'll answer that this way. If I'm, you know, kind of on the fence maybe about a racket, I will try to very eloquently state, hey, you know, this may not be the racket for me, but it could be the racket for this version of a tennis player. You know, as far as the videos and stuff, we have great video production guys at Tennis Express, and we get assets from a lot of the manufacturers, you know, like little clips from video and that sort of thing. So we try to always do good by or do right by the manufacturers. You know, if they give us some info or some photos, you know, we always try to, do right by them and say, hey, we're going to use these assets if you give them to us. And, you know, I'm not really, you know, this racket's terrible. That's not really my. yeah. And the thing is about a comment like that is that doesn't really tell anybody anything, if yep. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's more about, well, you know, why is this not for you? Or, you know, why is this for somebody else? I lost my train of thought. So it's really, it's not so much this racket's terrible, no one should use it. It's a lot more eloquent than that. It's, hey, if you are a 5-0 level player, then the Speed S might be a little too much racket for you. If you're, you know what I mean? It's so, right. So it's kind of that, you know, touch and go. As far as, you know, the manufacturers, at times will want to look at something, you know, before you post it on YouTube, or mm-hmm. I try to do it just just as a courtesy so that the manufacturers know we're using the assets that they give us. Like, I couldn't imagine being a sales rep and I get, Sam from Tennis Express, the rackets ahead of time, and then the launch date comes and the rackets are collecting dust in the corner and no one's done anything or written anything or shot any videos. Right. That would be incredibly frustrating, I think. So I always try, really, really hard with when we get the gear ahead of time to try to have the reviews or at least a couple of the reviews shot. Like if it's a whole racket line that comes out, we want to try to do everything we can do. And of course, that helps us as a store as well, having that content ready for the pre-sale date or, when the demos can ship, having a video about it just so people know, what's out there, what's coming soon, and all the important dates.
Awesome stuff, Sam. Appreciate that. And that makes a lot of sense. And as far as being a play tester, so I'm sure that after even currently, people at this point listening to the podcast, they might think, oh, wow, I would love to be a play tester. I get exposed to testing out all this gear. Like, wow, what a life, But what are the qualifications or skills needed to become a play tester as far as you know?
I think a lot of it is less. Everyone's going to think, oh, well, you need to have played the U.S. Open and have ATP points. A lot of those guys, they're not as finicky as you might think. I mean, some are, but it's about being a tennis nerd, man. if you love gear and you love tech, and I think a lot of the times the better racket reviews and the better playtesters that I've seen or reviews that I've written are more from kind of the everyman. I think sometimes our racket reviews, there's this perception where, okay, well, people are tuning into our racket reviews, but we're not ATP players or WTA players. And the thing I've always kind of thought is if people want to watch ATP or WTA players, they can watch Wimbledon. They're tuning into a review or they're reading a review because they kind of want to know what maybe a normal human thinks about, the new frame or, the new racket line that's come out. I think that and just being be willing to put yourself out there and research and contact reps when you have questions. And that could be, just a club pro or, a stringer or, just kind of paying attention to all the information that's out there and maybe sifting through that. I think the really important thing for a playtester is that you can't just be set in your ways. You can have things that you gravitate towards that you might like, but you have to kind of go into any review, any product review and allow yourself to be convinced. Or just the same way, if we all have our favorites. If you love the Federer autograph or you love the AeroPro, when you test a new version, you can't just, be giddy and, oh, well, I love this so much. This is awesome. You know what I mean? So it's kind of you kind of have to be willing to allow yourself to be convinced and kind of clean the slate and say, okay, well, if this is the first arrow I've ever used, how do I feel about it? What are the things that previous arrow users might want to know compared to the old one? And what are some things that people that might not even know that rackets come out every 3 years might want to know? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like having that empathy and putting yourself in and, imagining any potential person that could be purchasing the racket or reading your review or watching it. It's like, how could you relate to them any information that could help them on their search for a racket or search for strings or even shoes?
Awesome, Sam. Yeah, that's really helpful stuff. And regarding being a playtester, of course, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. But what is your favorite part that you just absolutely love about being a playtester?
I think it's really cool / infuriating because there's times when I'll see gear way ahead of time. Right. Most tennis rackets now and I guess most consumer products in general, they'll have, like an iPhone, they'll have like a pre-sale date and then they'll have the day that they ship. Sure. And that's kind of the same story with rackets too. They'll announce a new, I think Head just announced, for example, like a new Gravity racket series is coming and the pre-sale was last week, but the ship date is next week. So, we had to, in order to have our content out in time, we had to have those rackets well in advance of both of those dates. So on the one hand, it's really, really cool to get to kind of be one of the first people to see the rackets and the retail paint and how they look. And I also, the nerd in me loves to get them on the Babolat RDC and see, okay, well, they really dialed the swing weight up here, or, you know, this is a lot more flexible than it used to be, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a difficult part of that is when I'm just playing tennis for fun, I got a group of guys that I play doubles with on in Austin every Thursday night. And sometimes, you know, I know stuff that's going to be on the market and I just hit with it and they're asking me questions about rackets. And I can sort of nod and wink and say, oh, well, maybe don't buy something yet. But you're also kind of so excited, but you're operating at a much different schedule, really, than, you know, like when the ad comes out in Tennis Magazine about a new racket. You know, I've probably hit the racket or, you know, put it on the RDC. Like, I've probably, by the time you see the video, I'm probably sick of whatever racket the video is. So that in that way, it's really cool. And I definitely, the tennis nerd in me kind of, I nerd out and look at the new specs and the new pictures and everything. And then I'm like, great, I can't really tell anybody about this for 6 weeks. So at times that part can be kind of frustrating because, you know, everyone's not as much in the know as you are.
Yeah, Sam, that makes sense. But I heard the head honcho, Brad, there actually told me that he has inserted a secret camera on those courts. So he knows everything you're saying. So you're.
Yeah, he does. He does. No, everywhere are his spies.
That's right. That's right. No, I'm just kidding. But well, at least as far as I know. But as far as, you know, being a playtester, you did kind of mention that it is difficult for you as far as like not divulging information. I'm sure that would be in anyone's case, especially with friends who are constantly asking you, which if your friends are listening, please stop asking Sam all these questions. he'd appreciate it. But As far as difficulties being a playtester in regards to the actual playtesting, like what are one or two things that are the tough aspects of being a playtester?
Well, one of the tough things is you know, it's most of the listeners probably have not had a lot of experience being videoed while you're playing tennis. And if you have been videoed, chances are it's probably of you smashing your racket or, you know, something less than glamorous. You know, there's definitely an art to it. You know, our video guys, again, are just outstanding about, you know, the edits. And I think the first time I went to play test rackets and we were, you know, going to shoot the reviews at Tennis Express, we had five rackets to shoot. And, you know, I just thought, okay, well, you know, we're going to go out there and knock out these five rackets in a couple of hours. And then later today, we're going to have five videos ready to rock, you know, all produced and polished and edited and everything. And I mean, the reality is it's a lot more work than just the shooting. And I'm sure the video guys are smiling at me right now. But, you know, the hitting part is, you know, everybody's first inclination is to just blast balls, right? And so while that can be really fun, and if you make one out of those 10 balls that you've blasted, then it looks really cool in the video and you can, you know, send the link to your friend and say, hey, check out this forehand at 27 seconds in. But the reality is, you know, you try to blast 10 forehands and you make one. Now you're tired. Right. Mm. And so then you've got three more rackets to shoot and then it's taking longer and longer and you're fatigued because you were hot dogging and now you're tired. So it really can turn into like, hey, you know, what we're looking for here is sustainable rallies, keeping the ball in play. It sounds silly, but showing the consumer that, you know, the Babolat Pure Drive can keep the ball in the court. You know, it's not anybody that's played tennis, even at the highest level, knows that it's all about mistakes. Right. And so there is not a racket invented. I don't know of one yet where you don't make mistakes. So a lot of times some creative editing is used when I flub an easy volley after a great rally or, you know, miss a, you know, dunk an overhead into the net. But the general idea is, OK, you're going to go out there and try to crush everything, but you got to just simmer down, a little bit and just kind of play the points. And, you know, if you miss, don't get too down about it. If you hit a great shot, you know, have a little bit of fun with it. But I'd say that was the first thing that was a shocker to me, again, is I thought it was going to be like a 2-hour turnaround. And, you know, you get all the hitting footage of three playtesters, right? And then there's the, well, you know, Sam was sweating, you know, in this shot, so we can't use it, you know, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's kind of these minor things, or a ball rolled onto the court, so that 20 ball rally is done. We can't use it, you know?
Right.
So there's just a lot more kind of polishing. And then, you know, we go into studio, and, you know, some of the times in studio, we'll do our commentary on the rackets kind of after we'll hit. And I actually do a lot better in that scenario, sort of off the cuff, just kind of talking about how the equipment made me feel. Some people are different. Some people kind of like some bullet points or, you know, some sort of script. It probably makes me more nervous when I'm talking about rackets that there's a script. You know, I do much better if it's just kind of, this is how I felt about it. You know, I struggled here, but I really loved this, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So, I'd say going into it, you know, okay, I'm going to be a playtester. It's going to be great. You know, I thought the process was going to be pretty cut and dry, but it's just a lot more involved, and there's a lot more moving parts than anybody would ever think.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Sam. So you're basically a writer, a playtester, and also an actor as well. So,
yes, in a certain sense, yes.
Sure. Yeah. No. But yeah, that's really cool, and appreciate your insights on, you know, especially like the video production. I know that's definitely hard, and with all video, it certainly will be more than one take, of course. And yeah, a lot of effort into producing a high quality video for the whole team there. As far as equipment,
the funny thing too.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say the funny thing too is, you know, with regards to playtesting, and you get a little bit of this from tennis pros too, teachers, right? So, you know, you and I can go out and sort of strike the ball down the middle, and you know, we're sort of rallying, but you know, the second we spin the racket, and you know, the serve is included, like it's a very different ball game, right? Like it changes so much. And I always used to think when I was teaching a lot of lessons that, you know, I'd be hitting with a, you know, like a player that could rally, but you know, we're not really competing against each other. And then, you know, I'd have a weekend league match and I'm like, why is this guy not hitting it right to me? You know, it can kind of like, you know, you think, okay, well, we're going to test rackets on Tuesday and then I have a match on Friday. So I'll be ready because I play tested on Tuesday. No way. That's not how it works. It's definitely like a, well, wait a minute. Don't they know that I'm supposed to finish this ball with a high volley? What are they thinking? You know? So, it's definitely like a difference in, okay, play testing, you know, keeping the ball in play, you know, trying to show the racket's qualities. Mm-hmm. And then, man, I'm just trying to get to the bench 'cause it's 100 degrees outside. You know, you're trying to compete and then sort of, play test rackets is really, really different. And it's, I'm trying to think, I guess probably tennis pros could relate the most, you know, where you've taught 5 hours and then maybe you and another pro are going to strike some balls after you're, you know, you've both already kind of court logged for 5 hours. And then somebody goes, let's play a set. And you're like, what? It's just a totally different feel.
Yeah, no, totally. Like they're probably starting their matches with the continental grip because they're feeding for like 10 hours straight. But
exactly.
that's good stuff there, Sam. And so I guess we talked about the equipment. I wanted to ask if there was any other equipment you test. Like obviously you're testing rackets and strings. Is there any other equipment that you test as well?
Every now and again, I get to play test some shoes. Nice. That is, you know, along with rackets, shoes is a tough one because like everybody's making good shoes. You know what I mean? I mean, every brand now has, they've got an $80 pair, a $110 pair, and a $150 pair. And I know 150 is high, but it is what it is, right? I mean, that seems like that's where things are headed. But you know, the tougher part of like the shoes is you get to, while people have different game styles, people definitely have different foot types. They've got different strides, different foot shapes. So I find that to be maybe because I know a little bit less about it, like I have a little bit less expertise in it, but I find the shoes to be a lot more daunting as far as, you know, trying to explain, you know, well, you know, for example, these shoes hit my feet great. You know, I wore them, you know, the first time and played 5 sets and they're awesome, no blisters. And then, you know, somebody reads that review and they're like, what were you wearing? What, you know, these shoes cut my feet up like crazy. But yeah, that the shoes are tough. They're it's cool. That's a fun part. You know, I wear a lot of the playtest shoes. I'll wear them to play tennis in, but I also wear them to the gym and, you know, for lack of a better word, just try to beat them up, you know, and see how much they can take, you know, how long the cushioning's lasting, you know, how light they are, how nimble. When I was a kid, my mom, I didn't always have the greatest tennis gear, but the one thing my mom always said is you got to have good shoes.
Yes.
And so I routinely would have, you know, Target shorts and a t-shirt on with Hanes socks, but then I'd have, you know, like some Sanford shoes on or something, you know.
There you go.
But I mean, that shoe technology is, I mean, we're talking about, think about the gap from Stan Smith's back in the day to now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty mind boggling. And I don't know, I might even say that the shoe technology rivals or maybe surpasses the racket technology changes, because it's a totally different sport. The way these guys are moving right now.
Yeah, for sure. Shoes are like, so just so important. I mean, really, that's something you don't want to cheap out on, because it can make the difference between actually even getting injured or not, depending on the shoe that you get. And you want to do the research, like Sam said, as far as what type of foot type do you have, like how do the sizes for the brand run, and you know, et cetera, I guess. But yeah, good stuff there. And just curious about maybe some funny stories, if you have any. I mean, do you have any like, I guess, funny or weird stories, like when you were testing a particular piece of gear or equipment, something happened that was unexpected, something like that?
Well, this was pretty funny. We were testing, we test indoors at Westheimer Indoor Tennis Club and in Houston, and they're real great to us and let us use courts. And it's a really, really cool place, kind of, you know, located right in the heart of Western Houston. And we were in there one time, you know, shooting, things are going along, you know, we've got a couple of rackets done, we're moving on to the next racket, and you know, we're indoors, right? And then it starts raining. And you don't think of that as like being a big thing, but you know, your mics, if the rain is hitting the structure, you know, you really can hear it. You know, yeah. It really changes some of the dynamics. And that's kind of one of the things you don't think about. And so I remember going back, and the guy who shoots it isn't always the same guy who's editing it. And Richard, one of our editors, one time we came back after the rain, and he's like, "What was going on in there? You know, what was that?" It's like, yeah, well, we got halfway through the playtest and it just started pouring. I mean, it wasn't like a slow kind of middling rain. I mean, it was, you know, raining sheets. And so it was really loud, you know, the kind of thing where you almost wouldn't even drive because it's raining so hard. But, it, you know, it was so loud, and we could use the footage, but there's pretty much minimal audio. You know, you can't, you know, you kind of have to use the voiceover there, but
right.
That was one time. I always think it's funny. You know, every now and again, on a play test, one of us will just get wrong footed or, you know, fly a ball into the back fence or something. And sometimes just off the cuff reactions, or like sometimes I'll be a big dope. And if I hit an overhead for a winner, I'll like pump my fist, and you know, the other playtester just rolls his eyes, and you know, I roll my eyes too. But I think a lot of that actually it translates too. It's humanizing, yeah. Right? And I think everybody gets excited when you just level a forehand return, or when you know play a drop volley to perfection. Like, that's what makes tennis fun. So when we do those reviews, we want to try to keep it so that, you know, obviously everybody knows there's production involved, but we want them to know that there's real people, and you know, we miss shots too. Or you know, I think I hit a tweener during one of the play tests early on, and it was like the first take, and I know nobody will believe that, but it was the first take, and then I think I probably tried, you know, three or four more, and I'm like 0-for on them. But you know, again, it's just kind of fun and you know, goofy. I think sometimes, like, you know, me and one of the other playtesters will get in like a slice contest, you know, where we're just chopping the ball, you know, trying to keep it low, and you know, just kind of little moments like that of levity, that really makes it fun. You know, when, you know, the tough part, right? I know I'm rambling a little bit, but the tough part is when, you know, you're not feeling great on the court. Like I tweaked my knee about a month ago and, you know, it was tough because I'm like, man, my job is to get out there and test some of this gear. And, you know, we got all these rackets are starting to stack up. And so, you know, you don't really think about that. Like, you know, if you're a professional tennis player and you hurt your knee, you're not making money. Right. But, you know, during that time when I hurt my knee, I was like really feeling, I was like, man, I got to, like, I'm not in the know. I don't, you know, I haven't felt these new rackets. I don't really know what they feel like because I can't move that great.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So, you know, the fun and levity, you know, you can get hampered because we can still get hurt too. The older we get, the more we get hurt, right? So,
yeah.
So that's a big part of it as well, is just trying to stay healthy. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm not hitting that great that day, or, you know, I'm thinking about what I need to get at HEB, or, you know, another one of our playtesters is kind of, oh, they've got an exam that day or something in school. So it's, you know, it's always like, hey, we got to refocus here. You know, sometimes, you know, we'll serve, and, you know, like the old drill, right? You make the serve and then you make your return and then the point starts. And so many times during play tests, or not so many times, but at times it's like a mental battle. Like, okay, Sam, all you got to do is spin this serve in, you know, and I'll miss the serve, and then I'll miss four in a row, and then I'll make the serve, and then the returner will miss. And, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, it's like, hey, we got to get our stuff together here. Time's a ticking.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. It's definitely not an easy job. And in some senses, it's just like, I mean, yeah, you know, you're a tennis professional in terms of performing well on camera and things like that. But I was also curious, Sam, about your string tests. I mean, of course, you have, like you mentioned, there's so many strings out there. So when you use string, like, do you just use it during the play test and then cut it out and then, like, restring it? Or, like, how does that usually work?
So I can't speak to what the other guys or playtesters do, but I have a stringer in my garage. So if I am stringing at my own rackets, you know, I'll try to leave the strings in there. I have since my gear obsession began, I've never been a leave the strings in the racket until they break guy. For a couple of reasons, I feel like a lot of the copolyester strings, they probably have a shelf life of, you know, you string it up, you're probably talking about, you know, 15 to 20 hours, you know, maybe a little on the higher end sometimes with some strings, maybe on the lower end. But so, you know, for example, I'll get a play test string that's a polyester and I'll string it in my garage and, you know, I'll hit it, you know, probably around 12 hours, or, you know, three or four times, you know, I'll hit with this string and then, okay, the reality is I'm going to have another string to write about. So, you know, I cut the string out. Sometimes I really don't want to cut the strings out, but duty calls, so to speak. Right. So, yeah, I'm generally a believer that a lot of the recreational players see either breaking strings as a really bad thing, or they want to keep the strings in their racket, you know, until they do break. And, you know, the strings are kind of like the engine of the racket, right? So they need to be replaced quite a bit, just like an oil change.
Sure. Yeah, it's really not worth it to just try to squeeze every single minute of your strings out if it's resulting in crappy performance, bad feel. I mean, why not just restring if you can? Curious, Sam, what stringer are you using? Can you kind of describe it and you know what type it is?
That's a good question. It's gonna date me even more. It's an old Alpha. Oh, it's an old Alpha machine.
Nice.
And it's a crank machine. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it actually has a model number on it. It's just a you know, 2-point mounting. It's really, really old machine, but there's something. I am not a handyman in the slightest, but there's something that makes me feel like an incredibly accomplished handyman. The fact that I have a really old stringing machine and I use it in the garage, and I pull the racket off the machine like I'm from the Sword in the Stone or something, you know, just look what I have created, you know, yeah, this awesome racket, you know, and, but I don't know how to, you know, replace sheetrock. So, but yeah, that's kind of my thing. And you asked me about rackets earlier, how many rackets I have. I've got more strings. Mm-hmm. Thankfully they take up less room, but, it really is ridiculous how many strings there are on the market. And mm-hmm. so kind of because of that, because I'm writing reviews about strings, I'm just not somebody that can leave a string in there for a month, you know?
Sure. Sure. That makes sense. So I got one more question for you as far as play testing. And then I want to ask you a few gear questions if that works. But so I know we talked about, like, I guess the qualities of a play tester, but let's say somebody right now is thinking, man, I want to become a play tester, you know, let's do this, right? So if somebody wanted to do that, what advice would you give them? You know, what would they need to do to try to break through and actually become a play tester?
Well, they could email me.
There you go.
They could email me. It's samj@tennisexpress.com. And then, you know, I think a lot of the tough things is that at first, you know, people say, yeah, you know, I'll test stuff. And then, you know, they start testing stuff. And a little bit of sort of what we discussed already about switching between playtesting and competing, right? So let's say, okay, Mirbon, you're going to be a playtester for Tennis Express, and I send you stuff, and you're like, well, Sam, I can't test this because tomorrow's our sectionals, you know, or I can't, you know, I know I need to test this because, you know, Sam needs the feedback, but I really just want to use my old string or my old racket. So it can kind of, at first you just think, oh, well, that's just so easy. You know, I can just play test and I'm playing tennis anyway, and it's great. But there are times even where I'm playing competitive doubles and I want to win, but I'm like, well, you know, I really want to win. I should just use the racket that I use, but mm-hmm. you know, I need to get a little bit more info about this stick and a little mm-hmm. bit more, you know, material so that I can write about it and produce the content. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, you know, I guess if I was playing for money, maybe I'd use my favorite racket. But yeah. Since, you know, this is just this. I mean, that's the biggest thing I'd say is, you know, people that play a lot of tennis, the odds are they're pretty competitive. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to be the ones who are like the Monday before a tournament. Yeah, I'll test that. Or so then you kind of run into, well, who wants the playtest gear that will actually follow through, right? Mm-hmm. You know, even the, I think the first playtest string I ever got was from Luxalon. And nice. I'll be honest with you, like they gave me a set of string and I playtested it, and there was this form to fill out and all this stuff to fill out. And I, you know, I got busy doing what I was going to do, and I didn't fill it out. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very easy thing to get people to sign up to play test, but it's mm-hmm. a much more difficult thing to get the follow through of, hey, Sam, here are my 200 words on 4G, or, you know, here's what I thought about, you know, Babolat's origin string, or, you know, so not that everybody's like that, but it's always easy. Like, oh yeah, free stuff, I'm
right,
in.
Right. Right.
And then like even myself, like I mentioned it earlier, I feel a lot of pressure when we get some of these assets earlier. We get, you know, like some sample string sets early. Like I want to get them on the stringer and try to get some, you know, a feel for the string and figure out, you know, what I can talk about. I don't want it to just sit there collecting dust. And then, you know, they've produced something for me and I haven't, I haven't delivered any kind of feedback for them. And I mean, at times it's a different kind of pressure for sure. But the long and short of it is, if you want to be a playtester, the number one thing is you ask. And then the second thing is you follow through.
Right.
If you're unable to, you know, hey, I really want to be a playtester, but our season ends in a month, and pretty much during season, I can't playtest for you. I just feel like as long as all that stuff's sort of out front, it's a lot better. And then, you know, I'm sure it happens. I don't think it's happened to us recently, but you know, you send somebody a test racket and you got to have some assurances that you're going to get it back. So, you know, there's unfortunately some, duplicitous people out there that, the other thing, I mentioned this earlier, was to be a playtester, you don't have to be an ATP pro. And a lot of times when people inquire about being a playtester, they exalt this unbelievable playing career. And I'm like, why are you testing rackets from us? Just call Wilson. If you're that good, they'll send it to you.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, you'd be surprised. I'm an aspiring junior, and you know, I've achieved, you know, this ranking in Northwest Houston, or, you know, like there's all this stuff, and you're trying to sift through, like, okay, well, you know, students and kids have a lot of stuff going on. It's great that they want to play test, but if we're going to dish, you know, stuff out there, we've got deadlines to meet. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, pre-sale dates and shipping dates. Like, we want to try to have that content out as close to that date as possible. And if we've got unreliable play testers, that's a lot harder to do.
For sure. And these play testers, I mean, are they always going to be local to you, or do you do something where like they just put it on their own site or something?
No,
like that?
No, we've got a couple of play testers that contribute, and they're offsite. One of them's based in Idaho.
Cool.
And he's been doing rackets for us for a long time. And I actually, you know, we're always looking for, you know, reliable play testers, you know, that can produce content. You know, it's nice if they have their own stringer, right? Because if you've got your own stringer, then, you know, you can string the racket at no cost. So if you think about it, even if I furnish you with some string, but you don't have a stringer, you're still technically paying to play test, because you've got to pay somebody to string it. So, with rackets, I guess it's a little different, but, yeah, I mean, we're always looking for reliable play testers. There's so much gear and so many strings and so many rackets coming out all of the time, every which way.
Awesome. Well, there you go, guys. Wow, that's so cool. So I definitely think I'm going to be trying to test some more gear. Actually got a sweet new camera, so I'm going to put out some YouTube videos about, of course, just helping everybody improve their game, in addition to this great podcast with Sam here. But Sam, as far as the brands out there, so, and I mean, you know, you don't have to name the names, you could if you want, but I'm going to ask you, what brands out there do you think are really producing some of the best quality rackets and strings, and maybe apparel too, you know, like just maybe some suggestions that we should maybe gravitate towards, at least initially when looking at these types of products?
So I love the recent trend in making rackets that are a little bit more comfortable, you know, on the arm, a little more user friendly. You know, your Graphene 360 from Head. You know, Wilson has the new Clash technology. That's just, you know, the unreal comfortable rackets, and they still offer pretty good stability. I think another brand that two brands that have kind of been coming on, well, Babolat, obviously, you know, they're still Babolat. I mean, I'll say this, I think even Babolat, that has, you know, historically, I feel like people have said are on the firmer side of things, as far as like a pure drive or a pure arrow. The flex ratings haven't changed all that much, but I do feel like those rackets are more comfortable than in years past. So that's a really good sign. And then kind of two of the smaller ones, Yonex, if you've paid any attention to pro tennis, they have really stepped up, and they're, you know, a lot of the younger American players are playing Yonex. You know, they've always kind of been around, but I think right now, in our store, they're, you know, I think number four, probably Babolat and Wilson kind of switch back and forth, and then Head, and then probably Yonex. And then one of the cool things about Tennis Express, you know, a lot of local clubs will have your Wilson and your Babolat and your Head, but a lot of the smaller brands, you know, like, you know, Vocal and Technofiber and Pacific, you know, some of these brands that make really, really nice products, but you don't see them like in your pro shops. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool for, you know, for working at Tennis Express, is that we get to see some of those kind of smaller market, I guess, but still, you know, primo grade A products, that they produce. I like all of the brands. I think the thing I'm most excited about now, though, is that with all the manufacturers, they seem to be gravitating away from stiffer, lighter, you know, more arm problems, or more arm problems, and to, hey, we want to keep these tennis players playing tennis. And so, you know, they're doing subtle things to the makeup of these rackets, that there's a little less arm fatigue. And, you know, while the ultimate cure for tennis elbow is, you know, proper technique, I think the other solution can be just designing equipment that kind of saves people from themselves a little bit. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, if they're over swinging, maybe there's a little bit more dampening, a little bit more comfort built in.
Right.
I know that was very politically correct, you know, not picking a favorite brand. So
no, that was good. That was good. You named some of the best ones out there that I definitely agree with, and some that have been on the podcast. So great stuff, Sam. And I know you mentioned some gear, but I'm curious about any new gear that you can actually I'm being like your friends now, but basically any gear that I guess you can already disclose that either is already out but new, that you've like recently tested or you're going to test, anything like that that we should be excited about.
So we have hit, be on the lookout. I'll say this. I can neither confirm nor deny the presence of, no, just kidding. I'll say this, the from Wilson, you know, they just had their Clash release, but they're also about to update, the most popular racket on the pro tour. And I think anybody can probably deduce what that is. If they do just a little bit of Getty image searching or, you know, turning on the TV, but, we have hit them, the new versions. They're very sharp, if you know what I'm saying, very sharp. and, they got a really cool look to them, and that should be around, I think, just prior to the US Open. I want to say we should be getting some teasers in the next, probably next week, about this racket that I can neither confirm nor deny exists. really cool stuff. It's got a great look to it. So Wilson is definitely going to be updating one of their most popular, pro tour lines. And, it's also a really popular model in the college game as well.
Sweet. Sweet. Very cool. Appreciate that, Sam. So as far as the approach for selecting, let's go with rackets and strings. Well, I know they might be kind of different perhaps, but can you give us a general approach that we should take just so that it can kind of help cut down, you know, any, you know, time and like any like pains that people normally experience in like spending hundreds of hours on like trying to find the perfect string or racket?
So the two biggest things for me are that if you're going to use a polyester or a copolyester string, racket head speed has to be the prerequisite. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're taking a college course in, you know, topspin forehands and you haven't taken the racket head speed course, then you're going to have a really hard time going to the 201 level for the topspin course. Right. So you have to, that is the prerequisite. If you cannot make the strings move on the racket, then polyester strings aren't really going to do much for you. And you're probably going to, you're probably using the wrong string and your arm's probably going to be barking at you. That's the first thing that I'd say. The second thing is that there's a general rule I try to go by, and that's that if you're using a pretty flexible racket, you know, most of the time a flexible racket's going to be like a thinner beam. If you're using a more flexible racket, then you can use stiffer strings, right? I think what I would really try to avoid is, let's not use a very stiff racket with a very stiff string at a very high tension. You know, that's kind of like the three X's in a row. That's probably bad news. Unless you make your living with ATP prize money, then you don't have to listen to the podcast. you don't have to listen to Sam. Yeah, you still should. You're right. But you don't have to listen to Sam on his soapbox. But, and then I touched on it a little bit earlier. Nowadays there are more and more monofilaments that don't contain polyester, right? So you've got Babolat Origin is one. It's kind of a unique feel. Like, it's harder to describe. You know, I'd almost just say, you know, spend the $16 on a set and try it. If you've played polyester and your arm doesn't agree with it, but you don't want to, you know, saw through multi-filament strings really fast. Mm-hmm. Babolat Origin's a good one. Head FXP Tour. A lot of the manufacturers are now kind of sort of like they did with tweener rackets in the mid-90s. You know, they started making these rackets that were more usable by more game styles and ability levels. Mm-hmm. Now some of the manufacturers have strings coming out that are sort of – they have a little bit of polyester in them, but they also have – you know, multifilaments and polyurethane. It's a bunch of big words, but basically they're searching for, you know, that right mixture for players that maybe need some control and durability from polyester, but they still need some comfort as well. Another example, like Diadem has a string, Evolution, Ashaway, mm-hmm. Monogut ZX is a polyester-free monofilament. And they're not for everybody, but I think it's just the manufacturers. They're trying to give options to players that, you know, like I said, they may love Rafael Nadal's string, but their arm may not. So, you know, you're trying to find that right combination to keep them healthy and keep them playing, and still, you know, happy with the feel of the equipment. Awesome. The last thing I'll say on string is that I said it earlier, is that, breaking strings is not a bad thing. And so I see from time to time, hey, you know, I'm playing 5 hours a day and this string only lasts me 3 weeks. And to which I say, well, that's kind of what it should do. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're playing 5 hours a day, Monday through Friday, you know, at summer camps, I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to string your racket with steel cable and it lasts that long. You know, I mean, that's kind of what, you know, what people don't understand is that when you're hitting tennis balls and you're swinging at a pretty quick rate of speed, unless you're shanking the ball, the strings are taking the beating, right? Mm-hmm. And so you got to look at it that way. The strings are the disposable thing. The racket, you know, you don't want the racket taking the beating. So you're going to break the strings. The strings are going to wear out, and just not being afraid to spend the, you know, $12 to $15 getting new strings. We spend, you know, however much, $200 on a new racket, you know, once every couple years, and then we leave the same set of string in there for 6 months. That's just mm-hmm. not, mm-hmm. That's not good math.
Yeah. Not good math at all. I agree. Yeah. And actually, when you mentioned, the Ashaway string, it rung a bell, because you're a master racket technician. And also we had a Tim Strawn as well, on the podcast.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a previous episode, I can't remember the exact number, but I'll have it on the show notes page. But anyway, yeah, it's just really appreciate this advice as well. One thing that I racked my brain with, actually recently, even though I played for so long, is, it's choosing the gauge of the string. So can you give us some advice on choosing, like, which gauge? You know, you got 15, 16, 16L, 17, 18, 19, and I'm probably missing some others. But can you give us some advice on choosing a string gauge?
Yeah, so I believe a lot of this has to do with your frequency of breaking strings, right? Okay. So let's say I've never played you know, I've never played with a polyester string, but I'm starting to cut through, you know, my, 17 gauge Wilson NXT or, you know, Babolat XL, whatever the case may be. Well, the first step, I think, is okay, well, why not try 16 gauge, right? So, okay, we went from 17, let's go to 16. And if the string's lasting, you know, a pretty good bit longer, then, you know, we found the solution, at least temporarily. If you start breaking that 16 gauge synthetic gut or multifilament pretty quick, I would graduate to, you know, Technofiber has a couple, you know, one of those I mentioned earlier, like a HDX, sort of like a poly multi, you know, mm-hmm. I call it like an internal hybrid, right? So trying to get the best of both worlds, right? So before you'd go, okay, well, now that I'm breaking my print synthetic gut, I want RPM blast, right? Mm-hmm. So there needs to be like a pretty big, you know, middle ground there. And so I would start somebody with like, okay, you're cutting through these synthetic strings now. Let's go to kind of one of those poly multi combo strings, like a, what do you call it? HDX. That's not the name of it. HDX Tour. Or they've got a new one. Duramix is what it's called from Technofiber. Mm-hmm. And then if the feel's not for you and you really want to try a polyester string, I would try the thinnest gauge first. So again, what that means is like, so you're breaking that synthetic string once a week and it's getting to be really annoying, leaving your rackets to get restrung. I would start with a 17, 18, or even 19 or 20 gauge polyester string. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that the thinner string is it's going to move more. And it won't be, in my opinion, quite as big a shock to the system as going from, you know, a 16 gauge XL to a 16 gauge RPM blast. I mean, you're talking some big time, you know, string bed stiffness change there. And then, you know, along with the gauges, you know, if I was stringing somebody's racket with polyester for the first time, you know, nowadays we keep hearing from the pro stringing rooms that there are a lot of players in the 40s, mm-hmm. In terms of pounds, you know, there's players even under that. I think probably the median is now high 40s. But yeah, so in general, I would use the thinnest gauge that you can use, mm-hmm. And it not break, you know, in seconds. And then if you are really cutting through the thicker multi-filament or synthetic gut strings, maybe at first try a really thin gauge polyester and dial that tension down pretty good, mm-hmm. Just to allow yourself like some time to get used to the different feel. And you know, the biggest mistake is, okay, I'm changing from synthetic gut to poly, I'll string it at the same tension. So mm-hmm. then you're trying a brand new material, which is kind of designed to not have any give at the same tension. That's going to be a big time shock to the arm. But yeah, we default too much, in my opinion, to the 16 gauge, the 17 gauge. Mm-hmm. Even I think Rafa might use like a 15 gauge, but you know, last time I checked, I don't know of too many people that hit a ball quite like that. So yeah, the polyesters, especially thinnest gauge, you know, that's not just that you're not just carbon through. And then, you know, with multis, with a thinner gauge string, you know, you're going to get more bite. You're going to get more power. You're going to get more spin. So I had a guy not that long ago when I was teaching tennis. Once a year, he'd get his racket strung with natural gut, and he hit the ball very flat. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he did. He got his racket strung once a year. He's probably like a solid 4 or 5 level player, but I wasn't going to try to put him anything. He loves natural gut, so he spends a little bit more on it. But he only gets his racket strung once a year. You know, he keeps his racket in his house, so the tension hold is really good. So for him, that works. Mm. You know, you kind of. I feel like sometimes we're so quick to look to the pro tour for what they're using, but you know, those guys, they play tennis for a living. So you know, we need a little bit more help than that. Even myself included, sometimes I get, you know, borderline obsessed with polyesters, and I'm like, well, I'm like a 4.75 NTRP, so maybe it's time to, you know, use some hybrids or use some softer strings.
Sure, sure. No, great stuff. Appreciate that. Random question for you. This is kind of like almost like a stringing quiz, but it's really like there's no right answer. It's just your preference. I just have like 4 random strings near me. I want to just see like what your preference is. So I've got, okay. I've got the, what the hell? Celinco Hyper-G. I've got Solinco Tour Bite, and these are both 17 gauge. And then I've got Cyclone 17 gauge, and then I've got the Cyclone Tour, but that's a 16 gauge. I was just curious if you have any preferences, and I may or may not use the first one that you mentioned that's your favorite first.
Cool. You're talking about Vocal Cyclone, right?
Yeah, sorry, Vocal. Yeah.
So Vocal Cyclone and Vocal Cyclone Tour are incredibly underrated strings, and the prices are really, really good.
Yeah.
Vocal Cyclone is going to play a little firmer than Cyclone Tour. Mm-hmm. You know what I was talking about a second ago with somebody that wants to try a polyester string for the first time? Like Cyclone Tour is a really good option.
Gotcha.
I think it's maybe like around $10.
Yeah.
But it's Cyclone Tour, and you said you're like a 5-0 or like you know pretty competitive. If you're a pretty good ball striker, you might string both of those on a little bit on the tighter side for a poly, just because they're going to have a little bit more power potential than like a ALU power. As far as Hyper G, I don't have tons of experience with it, but I know that it's supposed to be a little bit on the softer end compared to Tour Bite. Not a soft string. Solinco would say none of them are soft strings, but Hyper G is a little bit softer than Tour Bite. And I think I've used it a couple times, and I think it's a good string, but I think it's here to stay. And if it's on the more comfortable side, then I think it's a pretty good string. With the Hyper G, my advice would be to go low. You probably remember this. They used to say with co-poly strings to do 10% less.
Yep.
And now I've seen it's either from Solinco or from somebody else, maybe more like 12 to 15% lower. Mm. So I think Hyper G might be one that I'd be below 50 on. Mm. What string pattern are you using, or what racket combo? That's another
huge
thing.
Question.
If it's a way open pattern, then you might go a little tighter. But if it's like a 16-18, you might go a little tighter. But if it's more like a head prestige or something with a really dense pattern, I'd go, maybe even mid-40s just to start out with.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's a great point there. Yeah, I actually use a 16x20 Pure Aero VS. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice.
Very nice racket, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, great advice there. I appreciate that. And maybe one last question for you before kind of some, closing remarks and questions. But how often would you say we should upgrade our rackets? And I can give you some parameters. I mean, let's say we play 3 to 4 times a week, a couple hours each of those sessions. And maybe like rough estimates, because I have a friend, like you mentioned in the beginning, I have a buddy, he'll go unnamed, I probably already outed him, but he's played with the same sticks for like 15 years. So I'm just curious, how often we should upgrade our rackets given those parameters.
So I think in the past, I still believe the biggest innovation that we've had in rackets, has probably been graphite. It's real sexy to talk about, the strings, they can, complete the quadratic formula and do all this stuff for these players now, and I still think that, if you've got a graphite racket, you're still probably, within the, 80th percentile. I think, in terms of, you're probably okay. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that has changed a lot in the game is that, it used to be very common for, you go to a tournament and any one of these players has a racket that's over 12 ounces, even with graphite. And now I think you're seeing a lot more of it. And even as I get older, I grew up playing with a 95 square inch head, and I think I was goofing around the other day and kind of trying to hit with one, and I'm like, I just can't do this. I can't do it. But to answer your question, I think what you try to do, first of all, demo. It's the golden age of the demo. I always joke with that phrase, but it really is. Like there's no excuse these days for not finding like the racket that, that, you know, can cure whatever ails you, so to speak. But something that I would tell your friend is I would say, okay, well, you know, what does he or she love about the racket that they use? You know, is it that they've used it, right? Like, just to be honest, is it that that's what they've reached for in their bag for, you know, 15, 20 years? Is it something more tangible? Like, I really like the beam or the head shape, or, you know, I like, you know, I just feel like it's so stable, because all of that stuff is copyable, right? You can find those. I'm not going to say you can find the exact copy. Like, you know, if you've got a 95 square inch head, I can give you a 100 square inch racket with the exact same specs, and it's still going to feel a little different, right? But I think the first thing is you got to have somebody that's willing to tinker a little bit. And I think a classic thing is, you know, they demo two rackets and don't like any of them, so then they don't demo anymore. Think about test driving a car, right? Like, you know, you don't buy the first car you test drive. I hope not. I hope nobody does that. If you do that, stop. drive more. Yeah, I would say the person that's really, you know, hung on to something, I would just try to start the conversation with, hey, what do you love about it? Like, what do you love about this old racket that barely has any paint on it anymore? And what do you not like about it? Because there's going to be something if they've used it that long.
Right.
Like, man, I feel like when I get jammed, the ball just sits up on the service line. And I want, like, more help in my next racket to avoid that, right? And then there, you know, from there, there's two schools of thought, right? You know, a lot of people, I think about it, somebody like Andy Roddick, you know, his racket made his forehand huger and his serve huger. And that's what he needed. That was his game, right? I think some people get a racket to try to make up for deficiencies, right? Well, you know, if I have too light of a racket, I can't hit a two-handed backhand. So I can hit a forehand with anything, but I need a racket I can hit a good backhand with. So does that kind of make sense? Like, you, you kind of have to decide that route. You know, there's not really a wrong way there, but you know, the odds are there's something out there now, especially from a comfort standpoint, which I talked about a while ago. The rackets these days, they've done a better job of engineering, you know, the modern rackets, like last year or so. They've done a better job about kind of, I think, protecting the consumers and making these rackets more comfortable. So there's maybe a little less arm fatigue. And that's something that I think, you know, somebody that hasn't switched in a long time would surely notice.
Great advice. I really appreciate that, Sam. So, what are a couple, like maybe two or three of your favorite resources to help tennis players improve their ability to find good tennis gear or to improve their game? Either one.
Well, I'm going to give a shout out to a guy you probably know, Craig O'Shaughnessy.
Oh, yeah.
He does a lot of data work for the ATP tour. And then I think he may still kind of consult with some college programs, and he might be helping out some pro players too. I'm not too sure, but
I think he is. Yeah.
One of my favorite tactical things that he talks about is that, you know, it's still such a game of errors, and it's easy to get, you know, bemused by, wow, look at that, you know, Federer hit that Del Potro hit that forehand 105 miles an hour. But at the end of the day, you know, Del Potro, like everybody else, is hoping for maybe one or two more winners than errors. I mean, it's a pretty error driven sport. Craig has this thing. He basically was like, a couple years ago, I think it was Novak, and he finished number one in the world. And he said he won 51% of the points, and he's number one in the world. That he played 50, you know, he won 51% of the points he played last year, and he was number one in the world. So all of us rec players that are like, I want to win 75% of the points, that's just impossible.
Yeah.
That's just not the way it works. And, you know, it's older now, and, Brad Gilbert has a great book about that, you know, just winning ugly. And, you know, a lot of the times, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, you go on the court and your strokes look better than the other guy, you're fitter, and
sure.
And then 10 minutes later you find yourself down 3-6 and you're like, I don't know what's going on here. What's happening? And mm-hmm. what's happening is probably that person is making you play bad. And so I think a lot of that it's the other thing from Craig that I always love is he says that you are not the most important person on the court. And I think that's a really good just, hey, you know, this isn't golf. Like, you're trying to beat someone. So if you're just, well, my forehand's my best shot when I hit it cross court. And if you're just going to do that and keep losing, then that's not really smart tennis. Like mm-hmm. If the other guy's a lefty and his two-handed backhand up the line is killing you, like, you got to pay attention to that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I can kind of go on the deep dive. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with tennisplayer.net,
mm-hmm.
You know, all the high speed dartfish footage and, mm-hmm. That software is very fascinating stuff. I think the caution there, right, is making sure that, that recreational or even competitive players, making sure that they know the difference between a style system. You know, like, there's commonalities between all the top pros, but there's also like some subtle style things, and maybe not trying to mimic the style, but more trying to mimic the essentials of what makes, you know, Federer's forehand incredible, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah, I guess. And then I watch a lot of tennis. I think for the most part, the tennis commentators do a pretty good job.
Sam, so great stuff, but where can we go to learn more about Tennis Express and connect with Tennis Express and also you as well?
So tennisexpress.com is our main site. We have a pretty new revamped blog set up at tennisexpress.com/blog. And we're going to be expanding into more, kind of educational stuff about, you know, for example, you know, there's a difference between buying a racket for the very first time versus somebody that's had a bunch of rackets and, you know, they kind of know more about what they're searching for. We have a lot of resources at tennisexpress.com. We have a new compare feature that you can use for rackets and shoes. We mentioned earlier just about different foot types, and that kind of allows you to compare, you know, narrow it down to two models, and you can look and see, you know, this one's more breathable, but this one's lighter, you know, just to kind of help you shop. There are so many products out there. I think that the name of the game now is helping people narrow down what they're looking for. We also have the filters that can help you with your racket search. If you're searching for, a racket that's less than 11 ounces or, you know, between 10 and a half and 11 ounces, you know, you can just click that filter at the side of the page and it'll, you know, populate with just those weights. So that kind of helps you, again, sift through all the, you know, hundreds of rackets that are out there. I can be reached on my email. It's samj@tennisexpress.com. And then, you know, for all our video content and reviews, we have our YouTube channel, Tennis Express. So you can search us, subscribe, just like everyone subscribed to this podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
And, we've been posting a little bit more content lately, like with gear guides. You know, we try to do gear guides for Wimbledon and all the Grand Slams. And then Chris Werman, he does all our shoe previews, and he does a really good job kind of helping people see the new technologies that are coming out as far as footwear goes.
Awesome stuff. Awesome. It's real quick too, because we talked about trying rackets and whatnot. You have some sort of demo program, right? Like, how does that work?
Tennis Express, we have a really nice demo program. You heard me earlier in the podcast say this is the golden age of the demo. So you can select up to 4 different demo rackets and you can keep them for a week. The demos are complimentary. All you got to do is pay the round trip shipping, which starts at $17.99 for 2-day delivery. And then we'll include a prepaid shipping label so you can ship them back. The demoing rackets is so important. And then, you know, demoing rackets, if you get the racket and it's not the string that you like, then you need to get the string in there that you like. I mean, it's really, really the only way to do it now, is just to help you figure out. I mean, you're looking at probably 20, maybe more models from each brand, you know, in that performance line. So very quickly, you're at 100 rackets. So even just, you know, like I always tell someone, it's a great idea to demo 4 completely different rackets. Like if you have no idea, demo 4 completely different rackets. And then the ones you hate, you know that's probably not one for you. And you can kind of narrow your search from there.
Awesome, Sam. And last question for you. I always close with this one, at least unless I forget to. What is one key tip that you can give our audience to help them improve their tennis games?
I think something that I see a lot, it's not as much X's and O's as it is about preparation. I think, you know, we're getting into the summer, and a lot of the times I got a comment this morning that such and such grip didn't work in the humidity in Florida. And I think what I would say is this time of year, you know, pretty much all these humid climates where the temperature is going to approach, you know, 90s or triple digits, wristbands, you got to have them. Towel, you got to have them. And, you know, replacing overgrips, you got to have that stuff. They even have, you know, like powder and stuff now that can kind of help keep your hands dry. But there is no worse feeling, I think, as a competitive tennis player than when you're about to serve and you feel like the racket might fly right out of your hand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it gets back to preparation, but, you know, wristbands, you know, having that stuff in your bag, it's super important. And then obviously, as everybody can tell from the videos, my cheeks are always red. So sunscreen.
There you go. Yeah, I've definitely had, I remember actually vividly being on my college tennis team at UMBC and a friend, his hands always got sweaty, and one time he hit a serve and the racket flew out and it cracked. So definitely good advice there. But Sam, I can't thank you enough for coming onto the podcast and spending quite a bit of time with us today. Really enjoyed the chat, and really looking forward to checking out more of your videos and Tennis Express's videos on all the different gear and everything. And I, of course, highly recommend that people check out Tennis Express as well. And I've ordered from Tennis Express before, and it's been pretty seamless, and I've enjoyed it. So, Sam, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. And shout out to Alex and Christopher as well for helping make this happen, and Brad as well. So, Sam, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Let's do it again.
For sure. Awesome. Thanks, Sam. All right. I hope you really enjoyed my interview with Sam Jones from Tennis Express. And again, big shout out to Chris as well as Christopher, who's another member of the Tennis Express team, Alex and Brad over there for all their support and having arranged this interview. I really appreciate it. And I really would appreciate it if you would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast. And you can do that by going to your favorite podcast app, searching for the Tennis Files podcast, and then hitting that big juicy subscribe button. For iTunes, you can actually go to tennisfiles.com/iTunes, and then you'll be linked straight to the show where you can subscribe there. And of course, all the links that were mentioned on today's show will be on the show notes page at tennisfiles.com/103. And you should definitely check out the show notes page, because I also have for you a free $5 gift card thanks to Tennis Express. And so if you go to tennisfiles.com/103 and you scroll down to the links, you will see that gift card offer right there. So just click that, sign up real quick, and it only takes 2 seconds, and then you'll get your gift card. So again, really appreciate you listening to the show. And what I want to do next is introduce a quote, as I often like to do at the end of the show. And this one is by Walt Disney. I've had actually a few quotes from him, very legendary individual. And he said, "It's kind of fun to do the impossible." And I agree. It's very fun and healthy to try to implement stretch goals into your life, you know, to really dream the impossible. Sometimes you might think it's impossible, but as shown by, for example, the Wimbledon final, we never thought that we'd see it go to a fifth set 12-all. I mean, these just legends of the game. Federer playing. He's almost 38. He's going to be 38 in August. And what a match that was. And I actually recently bought a little, I don't know what to call it, like a block poster type thing, and it's on my desk. And this quote says, "Dream it, wish it, do it." And I look at that a lot to help motivate me, especially if I'm kind of feeling lazy. I kind of look at that and then I remember all the goals that I have and what I want to accomplish. And it's really powerful for me. So that's kind of why I give you these quotes once in a while. Actually, after I meditate every single morning, I also post on my Instagram stories a quote that I get, and it's actually from the Calm app, because I meditate through Calm, which is a fantastic app. Really, really suggest that you check that one out. I'm not getting any kickbacks or anything from them, but it's just a fantastic app, and yeah, big fan of that. And also with my Instagram page, if you'd like to follow me, you can just search tennis_files. So that's TENNIS_FILES, and that would be cool. So I'll follow you back. Anyways, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Tennis Files podcast. I will continue to bring you the best content that I can to help you improve your game, as well as interesting interviews and so forth, like the one I did today. And wishing you all the best. Keep getting out there every day that you can, and pick something before you go out there. Have a plan to improve a certain aspect of your tennis game. It can just be one aspect. Work hard on it, master it, and your game will skyrocket. So, all right. With that, I wish you a great week, month, and year, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.